Thanks for downloading this week's episode of the Jibber Jabber Podcast.
Let's get cracked into it.
Run! Go! Get to the Jibber Jabber! Hey, Valerie! It's on Apple Podcasts and Podomatic! Freaking awesome!
Ladies and gentlemen, and all other creatures that have recently been invented. Welcome to this week's Jibber Jabber Podcast. This is a special episode. I would like to say I've got a special guest, but I don't. I've just got Kevin. How you doing, Kevin?
Same as every other week, just Kevin. Just here.
Just Kevin.
Just here.
So, I'm interviewing Kevin this week on his time in wrestling. I was the subject last week. I keep looking at the camera now. I was the subject last week of...
Scrutiny
my time and my adventures in Wonderland with Most Haunted Live. This week, you may have seen it on the Facebook community page that Kevin spent some time in the world, the wacky, wonderful world of wrestling.
Wrestling!
And we're going to get stuck into that a wee bit and find out a little bit about it. Now, as I've probably mentioned previously, I'm not a wrestling fan. I never have been. But having met Kevin, what I've got now is not a like for it, but a definite respect and appreciation for what these guys go through, what they put their bodies through in the name of entertainment. So, like I said, we're going to speak to Kevin about his time in there. So, first question I'm going to ask you, Kevin. A lot of people like wrestling, okay? But not everybody does it on a semi kind of professional level or even amateur level. So I'd like to know what it is about you that made you decide, I don't just like wrestling, I'm going to fucking be wrestling.
Well, I would never say that I was ever wrestling, that I became wrestling, but for me, where it starts is where it starts for most wrestlers or professional wrestlers or backyarders. When you're a child and you're watching SmackDown or Raw and then it's finished, and then you go into the room and you grab a pillow, start smashing shit at your older brother in your bedroom. That's where it begins. That is really where it begins. If you were a child that grew up throwing your relatives about, your wee sister or your friends, that there is enough for you to at least dip your toe in the bath water that is professional wrestling. So for me, it was that kind of thing. Do you know what was weird though? Growing up, when you grow up, wrestling's not something you can go to a job centre and be like, here's what I want to do. So when I was a child, I always had the dream to be a wrestler and always wanted to be a wrestler because I was so into it. But you couldn't just become a wrestler. Like, how do you even start?
Yeah, I mean, how long has the amateur wrestling scene even been around in Scotland, certainly?
Well, it was there back in the 80s with World of Sport, Giant Haystacks and Big Daddy and stuff. It fizzled because Vince McMahon pretty much took over every territory and turned wrestling into what's WWE now.
Yeah, he's a beast.
So with that, the scene died and was just kind of one of those things where here or there you would see people flying for wee shows. But in the last 5 years or so, it's had a hell of a resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing about wrestling. It is, like it is with other things, it will always disappear and it will always return. Right, it's like when you chop all the trees down, you need to plant new ones and wait for them to grow. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of what's happening in British wrestling now.
So you got involved in it because you were a fan and you thought, I'm going to do this. But that's the point I'm making. Most fans don't think that way. Most fans just, like, they'll do it in their back garden when they're playing with their friends, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they don't actually actively seek out a local wrestling school and go and try and be a wrestler. I understand you did it with a mate.
Aye, well, for me, what happened though, like, I've always been a physical kind of person. I was always in my garden throwing people about, getting hit in the head with stuff. I didn't mind it.
I can believe that.
So that was always within me, right? For me, it really started when I realised that you could actually sign up to learn how to wrestle properly. And that what happened was I had a friend who, a bit older than me, he went under the ring name Rollins and then eventually Sean Mercer. So I went into his store once, he was a manager, and I remember speaking to him and he was like, he actually done it, he was doing this and had done for years, and he discovered that I actually liked wrestling as well. So then he said to me, go here tonight. He gave me a phone number. He was like, phone this guy and then show up on this day, and what will happen there is they'll train you how to wrestle, and I'm coming back at some point as well, so it'll be quite fun. And I was like, no way. So I went to my mate Todd, who like, he's that mate that I've went through everything in life with. He's always been there. First strippers, I watched him being bronco busted by a stripper that was like,
watched him being what?
Bronco busted.
What the fuck is that?
That's another wrestling term. It's a move.
See, I have no idea.
It's a move that a wrestler would do, called X-Pac, where they'd get you down, and then what they would do is he'd jump crotch over your shoulders and just completely ride you like a donkey. In the wrestling sense, it was meant to hurt you, but when Todd went to the strippers with me, I remember looking over, right, as two girls were doing stuff right in front of my face to each other. I looked over and some stripper that looked like she's got 40 kids and no doubt.
A Tuesday morning stripper.
Right, a Tuesday morning stripper. She was bronco buster and Todd. And I remember like locking eyes with Todd, and he's like, I'm not sure this is how it's supposed to go. I look him right in the eyes, right, as one woman is eating out another right in front of my face. I can literally smell it. And as I turn around and I look at Todd, she's trying to kill him.
Are you sure this was a strip club?
Well, it was under the ground. Like, this was downstairs.
Fucking dungeon.
Mate, it was like Steve Hart's dungeon.
Was this?
It was in the grass market. What's the International or something like that?
Right.
But these strippers were out for blood that night. Only Todd's, though. I just remember looking at him. It's like, I don't know if this is right. I don't know if this is right. So
back to...
So I went to Todd, who'd also been a hell of a wrestling fan with me. What we used to do growing up is, you know, get a takeaway on the Monday night and sit and wait till 12 o'clock at night. Raw would come on, we'd sit and watch it, eat a takeaway, and fall asleep, wake up in the morning with like kebab meat on us, because we couldn't last that whole night. But that was our thing for so long, and I was like, Todd, let's do it. And you know what I'm like when I get an idea in my head, I'm like, Jordan, we could fucking do this, let's do it.
Well, I'm fucking sitting here, aren't I?
Right, exactly.
So, I remember when you first started talking about doing a podcast, I'm like, shut the fuck up.
You were, he's got his own fucking kit. But like the same kind of thing, the same idea. I was like, Todd, we need to do it. He was a bit hesitant in doing it. So I was like, mate, let's just try it. So we went, we showed up, and we kind of got our first peek behind the curtain at what wrestling is. And it's one of those things, let me tell you this, right? See wrestling, it's one of those things where if you're not in that bubble, it doesn't make sense to you. Like, there's such a thing called paying your dues, which is basically, it's like a respect system for the people that have come before you, because wrestling used to be such a hush-hush kind of industry, because at one point people did believe it was real, and that was the illusion, and that was, they had to keep that illusion up by making it seem like it was real. That etiquette has kind of been passed down and still exists today. So if you walk into a locker room with wrestlers that are established, and you walk in there and you're the new guy, you have to go around every single guy and shake his hand and introduce yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's you showing respect to being in that locker room, because at one point in time there was no way in that locker room. You had to be you had to be a big deal to even have a locker room, to be able to go into that kind of locker room. Do you know what I mean?
Are there any rules about that? Like, don't shake somebody's hand when his dick's hanging out? Or
No, I mean, there's always ribs being played on each other. There's never any rules. And if there were, trust me, they were always broken. Like, who'd have thought, like, when you went into a wrestling locker room, don't fuck someone else's missus was like a definite rule, but nah, mate, that happened all the time.
I just thought it was a general rule everywhere.
Yeah, no, it tends to be broken more so in wrestling. We'll get more into that soon.
This is shaping up to be fucking fun,
mate. That's just it. See, in regards to wrestling, there is what goes on for the audience, and then there's what goes on behind.
I'm probably asking you about that later.
But it's so different. And another thing as well is it's highly, highly underrated what even wrestlers do, what they put their body through, what they go through, what they have to do just to get in the ring, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not so much now, at least in some places, but there's so much that goes into wrestling that it's laughed, people can laugh and go, ha, wrestling fake, stupid, silly, throwing people about in leotards and whatnot.
Sorry, right. I'm going to sound like Joe Rogan for a minute. Just bring the mic a bit closer to your face.
I bet you, you know what? I bet you now everybody's listening to my voice far louder than what they want.
It's because you're touching it now.
Right? And you've just ruined everybody's experience.
No, I don't ruin experiences. I try not to.
I'll ask your wife.
Oh, damn.
maybe not.
That's my shit.
anybody that thinks that wrestling's stupid should at least attend two training sessions. And then after those two training sessions, if they've not got the full picture, because you will. After your first training session, you go there and they literally just beat the shit out of you to see if when you sign up to a wrestling school, they want to invest in you. Like, they can't just train you, they have to invest in you, because you're going to be an asset to what their school represents and to what their promotion brings, right? So they need to know straight away who to weed out. So your first day in, man, if you're not vomiting based on how physically they've pushed you, you won't get asked to come back. It literally is. I remember going in and being worked to the point that I literally was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then the trainer came down the stairs, right, and saw that I was sick, and then gave me a nice fucking wallop to the back with a handprint and says, make sure you clean that up. Like, there's no cuddling.
Yeah.
Right, as much as it is a cuddle kind of industry, right, there's no cuddling.
No snowflakes in that room, eh?
Nope. Hell no. It's just, it's a different world. And only people that step foot in a wrestling locker room will understand that. Like,
how did you feel like that first time you walked in and you saw the ring, right? You saw the ring, you're like, fuck, that's a wrestling ring.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm fucking going in there.
Yes.
How did that feel?
Amazing. Like, when you first see the ring, you're nowhere near ready to go in it. Getting in that ring is an absolute privilege, right? But when I saw it, I was just like, oh, like, it's like when, if you were to show up on a set of a movie, that maybe a movie franchise that you know straight away, like if you were to show up on a new Star Wars set and you see the Millennium Falcon.
It's a bad example for me, like.
Right, but for me and everyone else, right, the rest
for me,
of the world.
For the rest of the planet.
Yeah.
Right.
If you go to a Star Wars set where they're filming a Star Wars movie and you get to be part of it and you look at the Millennium Falcon and it's all its glory, those jitters are definitely there, like, wow, I'm going to feel what it's like to be in a ring.
I'd get it with the Enterprise.
Right, there you go. I don't know much about that shit, but that's exactly.
Your special effects are lame. Did you ever see that?
No.
I'll show you later.
You'll need to. But that's what it's like. It is. Even when you see people putting their gear on and stretching and stuff, it's a new world. A door's open to a new world, and there's like 90%, no, maybe not 90, 70% is all what you don't see in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Is where the real challenges lie.
What was the very first thing that was done to you?
Sexually. I mean, define.
To be honest, when you watch it, some of it is a bit homoerotic, isn't it?
That's what you can see in the ring. Wait till you see what goes on behind the door. See, when you first learn to wrestle, the first thing they do is teach you how to fall. Because you need to know how to fall.
Mm-hmm.
So what's called a break fall.
Yeah.
A back bump.
I remember that from my judo days.
Right, so it's like a toilet seat position, hands to the chest, and then kick your full body back, attack the mat with the top of your shoulders, and release every part of
the mechanics of that is amazing.
It is.
So you wouldn't think that just smacking your arms down takes so much of the brunt out of the fall. It's amazing how that works. I remember thinking that.
Mm-hmm. So they teach you how to do that. So your first couple of months are perfecting that, and then you end up going home with cut elbows, with the friction, because you're doing it wrong. You'll do it wrong, and what happens is you'll keep doing it, and even when you're like, my arms are actually dead, they're bleeding, they're like, keep doing it. See the parts that you're hurting, stop using them. Like, that's how they teach you. Like, they're hurting because they shouldn't be going down. You should be using your shoulders, your elbows. You're putting your elbows down, that's a mistake. If you want them to stop bleeding and stop hurting, stop using it.
Yeah.
Like, keep going, but the more you keep doing it wrong, the more you're going to keep hurting. And that is literally the mentality. That's how you're taught.
So I know that you went with Todd.
Uh-huh.
And as a result of Todd being named Todd and the fact that you two came together, what was you were basically a tag team.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't you?
Yes.
What was your names?
The Rod and Todd Experience. because the experience, just remember that was there. The Rod and
Man,
Todd experience.
I've got, I don't know if it's broken ribs or something, but this fucking hurts.
The Rod and Todd experience was a because see when you come into wrestling, especially when you're two teenagers straight out of high school or whatever, and there's not a pound of meat on you or whatever, right? You're used always. When you're introduced to the business, you're always used as the what they call jobbers.
Yeah.
You're there to make other people look good. You're in, you get squashed, and that's it.
Yeah, just there to get barbed.
Right. So the Rod and Todd experience is like Rod and Todd from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Rod and Todd. Right.
Oakley Dougley.
Yowdy Leowdy. I need my dog. Right. So we were used as that completely, and for our first how many of our matches, we were thrown in there with spandex, bloody swimming shorts, pretty much, right? And we'd have, I mean, our first, right? Here, Todd and Kev, got something for you. That's when we show up. We're in training now for a long enough time for them to have a bit of confidence that we could go in the ring and take a pace then, right? No offense whatsoever. Let me tell you that story soon, though, right? Wasn't supposed to have offense, but I battered a kid and it only went worse for there. I'll tell you about that in a bit, right?
Okay.
But
you lose control.
No. So they had a bit of confidence in us, and he goes, right, so we've got a show coming up, blah, blah, blah. There's going to be paying customers, blah, blah, blah. And we want a wee part of this show where you and Todd are going to be introduced. I was like, oh, this is awesome, Todd, now, proper. It's going to be amazing. We're going to have pyro and everything, right? How you see it in your head? They're like, no. You won't have any moves, right? You'll come out and you'll go up against Damage Inc. Damage Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about that for a second. Damage Inc. This'll be fun. Their name's Damage Inc.
And your name's the Rod and Todd Experience.
Right. I was like, Damage Inc. I'll go home and Google them. Yeah. Damage Inc. Muscly men with masks that just hurt. Like, there's like pictures, like videos of them throwing people into fucking fire. Right, I'm like, right, this'll be fun, right? Todd.
Whoop whoop.
Yeah. So Todd and I are just like, this'll be fun. Let's see how it goes. And what an experience. I remember when it was done, Todd and I were walking home after, like, another thing is, see, when you're in wrestling, paying your dues also means that you show up to the building really early. You are part of the ring crew. You learn how to build that ring, get it set up, make sure everything's ready. You're paying your dues in so many other ways than just paying your money and training.
Yeah, so you're basically used as a bit of a lackey as well.
Well, like, not even just used as a bit of a lackey, you're like exploited to fuck.
Super lackey.
Like super lackey. And that's literally where the ring crew comes from. You are that. And rightly so. You need to learn respect for what you're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's the way of doing it. I just think, especially in wrestling, maybe not now, I can't speak for now, but when I was doing it, maybe a bit too much.
Right.
A bit too much. And I say that about one specific place, not every place. But that would be the case. So we'd get there. And so our match could finish at 3 p.m. We don't finish properly until like 1 a.m. till the ring's back where it goes and we've transported it and everybody's away and the van's back, everything like that. And I just remember walking home with Todd and both of us just kind of looked at each other all sore, bruised and bloodied up, and we're like, what happened tonight? Like, what kind of reality is this? What someone pays to do? As I'm looking at Todd and he's got fucking blood spurts on him and fucking his chest looks like a can of fucking, what do you call that shit, spam. Like, his chest looked like spam because there's these things called chops where they'll put you in the corner of the ring, put your hands behind the rope, right, so
yeah,
you can't move, and then two of them together. Oh yeah, fucker, mate. Such a pain, right? You're screaming in pain, right? These guys are having a great time, fucking leaving worse than handprints on you, and the audience are like, "Hey, the bad guys get beat!" Way, I'm like, how is this good? How is this good for anyone?
Oh man! Right, so did you ever get past that level? I mean, how long were you actually in the wrestling game?
On and off, I'd say about 3 years. on and off.
And when you went off and came back, did you have to kind of start from the beginning again, or were you
always? But the thing is that you do retain so much. See me, right? I'm under no illusions. I'm not a ring general. I'm not a master at wrestling, and I wouldn't even say I was a wrestler. I was a guy that was in wrestling, and what my strengths were making other people look good. When, like, I'd get kicked in the face, I could really feed into that and kick my body up to make this guy look like he's just kicked my head off.
Mm-hmm.
So there was definitely a use for me in wrestling. Like, I was useful.
Yeah.
Because if someone was really amazing and the company had really big hopes for this person, throw them in with me for 20 minutes. Not even 20 minutes, right? Throw them in with me, I'll get a bit of offense, make it look a wee bit cool, and then they'll just completely break me off, fuck me up. But I was really good at making them look like they were harder than they are.
What's the most painful thing that you've had done to you in the ring?
Well, painful? Let me just run off a couple of things. I was thrown through a table that was on fire, right? So my body was the extinguisher. I had been smacked in the head with a chair. I had barbed wire pulled against my head. This was one of the worst, and I was just like, why are you even doing this? I thought this wasn't meant to hurt, right? Here's the turnbuckle, right? So the turnbuckle is the corner of the ring,
yeah.
which is steel, solid steel.
Yeah.
So I'm in the corner after just getting what we just called a chop, right? Ah! Two of the guys drop out of the ring at the corner, grab a leg each, and pull. So my body goes forward, right? I'm now forward,
yeah.
on my belly. They then pull my legs, so my nuts hit straight into the steel. So I'm like,
you know, to me that just sounds like common assault. That's not entertainment.
That's leaving the best of it, right? They then tangled my feet up, so that I was stuck in that position, right? Then started kicking me in the face.
What did you do?
I think that was in response to what I'd done. Let me tell you the story about our first match with Damage Inc. This was the first match. So we're told, no offense, don't hit anyone, right? Here's how the match is going to go. Because wrestling is, here's how the match is going to go. You know who's in charge. You know your spots. Anything between is, depending on how good you are, what you make it. Eliciting responses from the crowd, hearing their response and acting accordingly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in this match, it's kind of gone to shit a bit because the pain is worse than what we thought, so we're running about. I'm like actively running away from these folk, right? Because I'm like, if this was a real fight, fine, I'd come up and I'd fucking crack you, but it's not, it's entertainment, so I have to take pain because it's entertainment.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm like, that hurts and I want to fucking stand on your head, but I can't because this is entertainment, right? This is the wrestling business. I'm supposed to take a beating and enjoy it. So I'm running about like a bit of a dafty. Todd's like, all you can hear all the way through that match is this. Ah! Ah! Right? And I will show you, I have it. Right?
And this, he's not faking those noises.
He's not faking. I remember even at one point when he tried to tag me, he just kind of fell. He fell to his death as he tagged me in, and I'm like, here we go, and I've got a lot of people there supporting me, so I'm like, yeah, Kev, on you go, and I'm like, yeah, I can fucking do this. I go in there, and I allow to happen what's happening. I'm getting kicked in the head, fucking thrown everywhere. The spot was that Todd was supposed to be getting thrown off a stage through a table, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can imagine, it's not really a table, it's two prop-up parts, which like are meant, you get like these two archways that are, you buy for like B&Q and to hold up stuff when you're sawn through it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They get one of them and then they get a fucking door.
Okay.
Now, you can't go through a table really without killing someone, but a door, if you throw someone through it hard enough, will break.
Yeah.
So it's the illusion of a table. All they do is they unscrew the handle on that, anything that could stick through you and kill you and get him in trouble, right? So, I'm in this match and we have a plan to stick to, and I don't stick to the plan because I'm like, this hurts, and I'm raging, it hurts somebody. Anyway, they also didn't stick to the plan, the ring generals. They got a kid in to start hitting Todd, right? I'm like, what? This wasn't part of the plan.
Just a random kid.
Right, so they're holding Todd, and this kid's for the audience is slapping Todd. Something stupid, right? Right? Right?
What is this thing?
I know, right? This kid is fucking slapping Todd, right? And I'm like, I am not getting beaten off a kid. No. So I grab the kid, right? I pick him up and I swing him and slam him on the ground. Big no-no. Wasn't part of the plan. I'm not allowed to change plan, only they are, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't part of the plan. Could have hurt a kid. The two wrestlers that are now the generals, it's a big disrespect to them because I've just changed the plan and could have hurt a kid on their watch. Makes them look like they're not in control. Whoa! Whoa! So, remember how I said they were going to throw Todd off a stage?
Yeah.
Through a table. Now they've decided that's not what's going to happen. Right? So they both chase me down, attack me, right? Give me the stomps, kick in. Throw me out of the ring very dangerously, I'll say, by the way, that I actually was like, wow, I think my shoulder's popped out of the socket, right?
Mm.
At this point, I had quite long hair, so they actually grabbed me by the hair and dragged me all the way to the top of the stage. Now, when you're in wrestling, you communicate to each other,
yeah,
right? Very, very quietly and very brief. But I can't remember even what they said, and I was just like, you're not going to do this, are you? Because I hadn't practiced this, but it was Todd that was supposed to go through the table. I was like, I'm not prepared for this in any way. Now they fucking picked me up and threw me right off the stage, right? Right through a table. And I think my leg got caught the wrong way because I just wasn't at the stage ready. Where it's my first match. I'm not ready to take table fucking bumps. And my leg goes under the table as my body goes through it. So my full body weight's on the bottom part of my leg.
Right.
As I go through the table. I just lay there afterwards and was like, what the fuck? They literally dragged me up. I could barely walk. Threw me into the ring. One, two, three. Yeah, everybody cheers because the wee cocky guys, Todd and Kev, they're beaten and damaging. Yeah, and they get their celebration. And I'm lying there looking up to the rafters and thinking, mate, like, no one has ever thrown me about like this. No one's ever hurt me like that. And I'm allowing this for the joy of wrestling. So you have to put all that shit aside, like the real life stuff, and understand that you're going to, when you go into like wrestling, you're going to allow somebody to kick fuck at you. Just so you can entertain, and that's where that's for me was the hardest part, because when I get slapped in the puss, there's a part of me that's
primal,
right? That I just want to fucking punch them in the teeth, and especially when you know you could kick fuck at them, right? Yeah, but not to the audience. They think obviously based on what they're seeing that you're a puppet and getting thrown around, and I'm like, take this shit to the street, mate, and we'll see a completely different story. But that's the wrestling business, right?
Did you have a mentor?
Aye. Who? I would say, when I first started in wrestling, my mentor was the guy that ran the company. And I wouldn't say he was a mentor. I think he taught me things that aren't right. And I learned from things not being done the way they should have been to know when it was being done right. When I left that and went to a company called Reckless Intent, that's when I really felt I was mentored. The guy that runs that, Michael.
Is it still around?
Yeah, it's doing
same
really
guy running.
Yes, yeah. He's doing really well. I think he's leaving though because of an injury that will eventually stop him walking. So I'm going to go to his last show and show support. But he actually doesn't get the original company that both me and Mikey and a few others, Todd, all went. We all started in the same company, right? One thing I'll say about wrestling is it's full of bitches, right? It's full of Nancy fuckers that think they're the hard men because they pulled the strings, right? Out with the wrestling circle, they're not, they're bitches, right?
Right.
So within that world, it's so easy to get caught up in the bitchiness, the backstabbing and all that shit. So because we were all in the same company, and if you go out for a night out, why are you on a night out? You should have been in the gym. Like, they tried to take over your full life. Wrestling should be your priority. No, I'm like 19 and I'm doing what a usual 19 year old does. No. And you get shit, you get literal shit when you went into training. Why were you hanging out with him for? You're a fucking idiot. Slap, push you to be sick. Right?
Mm.
That kind of thing.
But is that not like them just trying to get the best out of you?
Nah.
Or do you think
there's
a bit of sadism in it where they just like to have that power over people?
Mm-hmm. You would think that they were trying to get the best out of you, right? But nah, I don't think so. I never felt like it was always for my benefit. But here's what happened, right? This is how Reckless Intent were born. So the owner of the company we were with originally, right, I'm not naming them because I don't want to shit all of them. There was good parts. I had good parts as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't have nothing personally against them, just my time became unbearable eventually. And when I left there, there was nowhere else to go. It was only there it existed. But Mikey left there before I did. Him and another fella, right? And they created a club scene where they would go into nightclubs. One would dress as a bunny wearing a Stone Cold t-shirt and the other would dress as like a Mexican. And they would put on a wee wrestling match on mats in like the Cat House in Glasgow and stuff.
Right.
And that done all right. Right, but that really ignited Mikey's fire to be like, nah, I really want to do this, but there was nowhere to go because you only had certain, it's not like now, like within the space of 10 years there was only one wrestling school close to us and then now there's loads. So Mikey wanted to create his own because he didn't have anywhere to go, so he created his own. He got like an investment deal through the Prince's Trust,
mm-hmm.
bought a wrestling ring and stuff to go with it, done, went through all the correct channels and set up what was Reckless Intent. And I've watched that company go from literally pretend toy microphones to hiring in wrestlers that are in WWE, right? The growth, and that's a credit to Mikey and everybody else that put their blood and sweat in it, because I was there when all the blood and sweat was getting put in it,
mm-hmm.
and blood and sweat went into that, and so they deserve all the fucking credit for that, right? When my time in Reckless Intent was the best time I ever had in wrestling. Right, towards the end when I left, it was I got very bitter. I bought into all the bullshit, and it was like it wasn't fun anymore. But I had to take a step out of that to look at it for what it was. That's 50% on me.
Something change?
Yes.
What changed?
Everything changed. See when you're in that world, man, and it's very hard to explain. Only people that have been part of it will understand it. Wrestling is very, 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 very bitchy. Like, you getting an opportunity that somebody doesn't think you're worth means someone that is worth it doesn't get it. That starts a bitching fest. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people backstab each other. So there's always bitching. Why did he get this? He wasn't a...
Well, I've seen that. Even up to the highest levels.
Mate.
It was when I saw... Jesse Ventura saying
mm-hmm.
that he was trying to start a union for the wrestlers, and it was Hulk Hogan that dubbed him in.
Yes.
And he was supposed to be his best mate.
And why did Hogan dub him in? Because Hogan knew that if they were successful in getting a union, that they'd all be getting paid the same as Hogan.
Yeah.
Right. Or Hogan would have to get paid the same as them.
So he'd be getting less. Right.
So look out for number one.
Yeah.
Wrestlers are the worst people. And the best people, right? But in the wrestling bubble, they're the worst people because they will stab you to make sure they get the best.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's very dog eat dog.
Very.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'd actually eventually left wrestling, it took me maybe 6 months or so to be like, because I got quite bitter towards quite a lot of people there, right? Based on so many different things, I felt because I cared about it. I really, really cared about that company, right? I felt like I belonged there, right? I got really bitter about things where I thought that's not right. Again, it was never my decision to make these decisions, and I just was only giving my opinion. And I got to a point where as well it started to consume my life, where I was in a part of my life where I'd just met my wife and we were starting to get together, and people get too involved in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like my ex cheated on me with someone from Reckless Intent.
Really?
That's how it happened.
I knew that she had cheated on you. Wait a
minute.
Your wife?
Not my wife, my ex.
Right, sorry. You weren't married before?
That's correct. Before I was married, I wasn't married before I was married.
Right, so we're talking about your ex-girlfriend?
Yes.
Just when you said wife, and I was like...
No, I met my wife while I was still in Reckless Intent. But I also got rid of an ex while I was at Reckless Intent. Yeah? Like, I went to Reckless Intent,
mm-hmm.
had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
She cheated on me. With someone from Reckless Intent.
Yeah.
Time moved on. I was still at Reckless Intent. I met my wife.
Right.
Right?
Got you.
Right. So
got you.
Within that, that's a very tough transitional period in your life to also have to deal with stuff like wrestling. And it was at that point where I was like, is there any point to me being there? Because it's just causing me unhappiness. Right? And I let that override everything that people had done for me, the time they put in me. The friendship that I got for everybody there, and just the all-round experience. So I had to get out of there, let me live a little, and then look back on it. And only at that point could I then go, do you know what? I see where it went wrong. I see what, like, when I think back about it now, all I remember is good times, never the bad times.
Yeah,
that's why I wouldn't even bring half the bad times up, because I didn't think it was worth it, right? I remember sitting in a cafe and I'd actually fell out with the guy that ran it, the guy that pretty much put his heart and soul in it, and we'd fell out quite severely. And I remember messaging him and being like, you know, I'm actually sorry for the massive dickhead of a move that I would have pulled at the time. But at the end of the day, it wasn't all one-sided. There's always two sides to it. And I think the only way I could move on for that and enjoy it for what it was by owning the shit that I had either got too worked up about, said, done. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had to own that shit.
Yeah, just taking ownership of your own behaviour.
I had to. And it'd be fucking stupid of me to assume that nothing was ever on me, because it was. At points, they were going through times where they really needed me to up my shit, and I didn't, because I was too busy acting like a cool guy, right?
How long did it take you when you were in the wrestling business to realise that it's not something that you wanted to take to the fullest extent that you thought you did at the beginning? Like, at the beginning, you'd have had aspirations of being in the WWE.
Yes, absolutely.
When did that go away, and when did it start becoming a chore?
When I realised that you can't have, you definitely cannot have a girlfriend or anything else in life. If you want to make it to the big time, wrestling has to become your life. It has to take over everything.
Which is hard when you've got a kid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard when you've got a child. It's hard when you've met someone that you're potentially going to marry, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to juggle all that. It's hard to be. You have to make that decision.
Was there one thing that made you just go, right, I'm fucking done?
Well,
or was it just the accumulation of all the things that you were?
It
talking
was an
about?
Accumulation. Like, for me, I knew straight up, I'm never going to take it to the fullest. But I love this company, and I want to be here for this company. Then the people change. So many people. Like, if you ask most people that ever leave a company, they leave on a bad term.
Yeah.
Right? What starts out and what makes you enjoy that disappears over time. And all the people that I'd started with, they weren't all there anymore. The people that I really cared about, the people that I had the best times with, they weren't all there. New people were coming in with new aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
The place was changing. And everything I felt was there that I loved about it had gone. And on top of that, I wasn't having the best time.
Yeah.
So I was like, so there were still people there that I was like, oh, this will be great, and I'll miss that. But those times have all changed now. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you move away from a town and you come back 10 years later, no one's the same.
Yeah.
What you remember is not what's there.
Yeah, like, you know, some of the guys that used to be arseholes are the nicest guys, and
right.
Some of the guys that were great are now dickheads.
Right.
It's funny how life changes people.
That's exactly the same.
Now, when you did walk away from it, right, when you were bitter and you left, was there a bit of you at any point that went, I should have fucking stayed?
Yes. But it would never have happened. Even now, I'm like, I still get the bug. Same with music.
Mm.
I look at a rehearsal room and go, I got the bug.
I know, you've been at me.
Right, right. I have.
You see me play one note on a guitar, you're like, banned!
Thing is, those itches will always be there. Same with the wrestling. I've been back since I left to the Eccleston tent for a one-off appearance. I enjoyed it. Place had changed, and I went in and I admired how it had come on, and I watch from afar still, and I'm like, oh, this is great, and I'm so happy for the guys that are doing it. But for me, I know it's not where I belong. However, if they ever asked me to go back, or if they ever needed anything, I'd always help. I was the guy that done a lot of the music, the entrance music for people, because I'd edit it all together or create it or whatever.
So that at the low levels of wrestling, you're not allowed to use.
I mean, you could come it to enter Sandman if you wanted to, right?
Right. But you just run that risk if it gets out.
Nah, not even, because you're playing it in a public place.
A public place.
Yeah, you're playing it in a public place. So
first time walking in.
So when you play it there, it doesn't really run the risk. It's only if you're televising stuff, which they don't tend to do. And I think, see going to a place like Reckless Intent, ICW, BCW, any of these companies that exist, you are better in your chance of ever making it to the big time. But there will come a point in your life where you go, can I give everything up to go on the road and never see my family again?
Yeah.
And that's where the real work begins. God, your real work begins when you get to the big time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? You've got where you are and where you go. I've worked with people that are now in WWE.
That's cool. So obviously it can, like, even the club that you were in,
mm-hmm.
it has been a path to success for some people, but
mm-hmm.
they've obviously been in a position in their life where they're able to just take all that on the chin
and
make wrestling their entire life.
If they do that, that betters their chances. For me, I'm very self-aware in that aspect. That will never be me.
Yeah.
But I always love it, and if they ever ask me to go back to do something, I would.
You've
do
always
it.
Been a family guy.
Look, there's a man.
Now, you mentioned a wee while ago that there was guys cheating on, like, fucking each other's girlfriends and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What's the worst backstage shit you ever seen? You don't need to name names.
No, physically seen.
Seen or heard.
Well, aside from my own thing, marriages, man. Married people coming in married with kids,
mm-hmm.
and ending up not married anymore because of shit that goes down. I mean, I don't know all the details, and I'm not speaking about one person specifically at all, but people that were together, I mean, so many people came through the door with couples and left not a couple anymore, and it would be because when you're in that bubble of wrestling, it takes so much. It has to take you have to become it, and when you do that, you ignore your family at home. Like, you can ignore your family life,
mm-hmm.
and that can cause strain. And you can meet someone else. People met someone else, and you start liking that person and know the nagging wife.
Yeah.
Dude, this might not always happen in life. This was just my experience. When I was there, I saw so many couples come and go, myself included.
Yeah.
Right? And for me, it was good to have the guys as well, because they became my family.
Mm-hmm.
Guys like Sean Fairbairn, who was Rollins. He was like a silent mentor to so many of us at that time, and I don't know if many people knew that, but he was really good. Like, I don't know, I've highlighted some of the negative parts of my time in wrestling, right? But some of the good parts is when someone believes in you and they invest time in you, like Mikey, Sean, the guys that really wanted the best from us, they'd go out their way. Like, they drive to be with you to make sure you're ready for your match.
Yeah.
To make sure it all goes on. Like, the hours and the effort that they put in, they'll never get enough credit for the stuff they actually done for so many people to make that show what it was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What's the one thing that you miss the most about it?
The camaraderie. Setting up for a show. Planning a match with people that you've never worked with or that you have worked with. Like, some of my favourite matches ever. Two of my favourite opponents was Sean, who I was talking about. Every time I wrestled Sean, I always felt like it was always going to be a good match, because even if I fucked up, which I did all the time,
mm-hmm.
right, that's natural, he'd find a way of bringing it back, right, and always made me feel like I wasn't trying to, like, I didn't have to work harder, even though I should have always worked harder, and that's on me. I didn't feel like I had to when I was wrestling him, because it was so natural,
yeah.
right, and it felt so comfortable. Another one that I really had a great and probably my most favourite rivalry was with a guy called Loblo, hi, Dave Martin, right? So he was this character called Loblo, which was probably, and this is only my own opinion, one of the most over in wrestling means the crowd just lapped that character up.
Right.
One of the most over characters ever in that company for me was Loblo. Like, he just got a response, and it's so unlikely though, because, right, I'll break down his character a little bit, right? There was this guy that was a bit of a dafty, right? And he kept saying, oh, I want to come to wrestling and be a Loblo, who's built like a shit rake, right?
Mm-hmm.
We would say, right, okay, come to the training, we'll teach you how to do it. He would never show up. He would then badmouth him online. He became a bit of a keyboard warrior to the company, right? And they're like, what is this, right? So what they've done was Dave Martin, who's the guy that became Loblo, came to the company, because we'd worked previously in the previous company, right? He was like, I want to get back into wrestling. Came to the company and was like, right, I'll need a new gimmick. And they were like, what if you just steal this wee shit's gimmick and make it awesome, right? So that he's like, oh no, they stole all my shit, right? And show that this guy's actually doing it,
yeah.
Right? So he stole the name Loblaw, right? And made it just fucking outstanding. He made it so good.
Just to rub salt in the wee bit for the other guy.
And he was just like, the Loblaw was just this funny Scottish kind of patriotic Scottish time. Now this was what built to one of the biggest, and for me one of the highlights that I'd ever seen in that company was, and it was right at the time where the referendum with Scotland going independent, right? Usually it's very hard to get people through the door to see a match, or to get people to just be fucking interested like it is on doing a podcast. Just to get someone interested is hard. This had all the fucking makings, right? So Loblaw is your typical Scottish guy you'd meet in the pub for a drink, right? And you could believe that he'd be good at wrestling, because it's one of those things where he doesn't have to be built like Rocky Balboa. You think his thing was, if you meet him in a pub and piss him off, you're going to get a fight for him, right?
Right.
That's what he brought to the table. And we had on the opposite end a cocky, arrogant character called Saint George, right? Good guy. His real name is Sean, right? And he was this English he's English, so he's an English speaking love real Britannia, right? England. And he was cocky, and his character worked so well as a bad guy, right? So naturally the referendum's coming up, we thought, well, how good would it be to have Scotland versus England, right? Mate, for like 3 weeks straight online, all you would see is people, oh, St. George, Loblaw's gonna kick your ass, yes, English bastard. And then he would take his camera out and be like, for I am St. George, and blah, blah, and he would just wind up everybody, right, on how much Scotland's a fucking dump, and he and of course you should go independent, who the fuck wants you, right? And then he would put Dave would put up a video on social media saying, in response, to the point people started making their own videos saying, oh, I'm going to show up, I'm going to watch him kick your ass. Or he would just get people so angry,
yeah,
right, that it made Dave such a good guy, it made him such a bad guy. It was like fucking Batman versus the Joker, man. It was just so right, it was so organic. Even my mum, right, who doesn't even get a photo taken, made a video and put it on Facebook and was like, you better shut your face, St. George, right? Now it all comes to showtime, right? So backstage we're all best friends, right, fucking arms around each other saying, let's make this fucking amazing. Out there though, they hate each other, okay?
Yeah.
St. George and Dave became such good friends backstage. So this day that was probably my favourite match ever when I was part of wrestling, just, and I wasn't even part of it, and we're all behind the curtain and this place is packed, everybody's paid to come and see this match, right? So Loblaw takes to the ring and comes out with his Scotland flag and that, and you can't even hear his music because the crowd are shouting so loud. That is magic, right?
Yeah.
St. George comes out, people are throwing shit at him, right? And he still stands there as things fucking go past his head, hands to the chest, for I am St. George. The real Britannia, his gear is all fucking English, right? And man, that match was, it was magical, right? And my favourite rivalry was after that, after they had that match and it had all been all done, and Loblaw won and he got the championship, and it was just fucking amazing. His next rivalry was then against me, and I had the greatest, like, I actually had the greatest matches with him as well. They were so much fun. Dave's very underrated in how good he was in the ring, and I was really good at taking his shots and making him look like he's just turned me inside out. I remember I jumped from the turnbuckle into his leg and flipped like three times round, right, that people thought I was dead, right? And to end that match on an outdoor in Bathgate, an outdoor setting, there was a table set up and it was a tables match, the loser goes through a table, and I remember I went on the outside of the rope and he just jumped up, booted me in the face, and I went flying, like near missed the table, smashed through it just, and I couldn't get up, and for me that felt like that was my very last match.
Yeah.
But that was my favourite time in wrestling. I can't even talk about it without smiling, right? So big up to those guys.
I think you're off your fucking head.
Well, I was when Dave kicked it.
Now, like I said at the beginning, I've never been a wrestling fan, but through being exposed to some things that you showed me and something else we're going to talk about in a minute, I do have a kind of newfound respect for what these guys do now. The first thing that showed me how difficult it is, and how much of a beating they actually take, was that Rogue to Wrestler show that we watched at your house before we went to the Edinburgh Comic Con. I watched something a couple of weeks ago. It was actually on the recommendation from my brother-in-law. He said, watch the backyard brawl between Rowdy Roddy Piper and Goldust. Now, I watched that, and I was going, when did this just become a fucking fight? Roddy Piper is full on punching him in the fucking eye socket.
Broke his knuckle on his eye socket.
Man, I was watching it going, this isn't fake.
There are times in wrestling where that happens, mate.
I mean, do they properly hate each other?
No, they love each other.
Did they?
They love each other and respect each other so much that they wanted that to be a moment in history that people say to their friends, watch that.
I mean, I watched it as a non-wrestling fan. I was like, that was fucking amazing.
Right. And they do the whole OJ chase. It was at the exact same time that OJ Simpson was being chased. That's why the car. Right. People will go above and beyond to make a moment that lasts and transcends through time. Yeah. You've obviously come to me and tell me you've watched that and you're not a wrestling fan. So they've done that perfectly.
Yeah.
Right. There was broken bones in there, everything, mate. Another thing about wrestling is sometimes it needs that. Sometimes if something looks too fake, it's cringy and you don't know why to watch it.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes you need that. I remember Mikey, I was in a match with him, and this I always remember. He hit me, and what you, when you get hit physically, when you know you've been hit and it wasn't supposed to be like that, there's what's called a receipt where you know, right, one's coming back for you, and that keeps it equal, right? And I remember just hitting him back, and then he hit me again, and I hit him back, and the hits got harder. And it created this tension between us where I'm like, fuck you! And he's like, fuck you! And hitting me back, right?
Mm.
And it's really creating that tension. So I'm like, he's really hitting me, and I'm really hitting him, right? So people watching that are never going to go, this is fake.
Yeah.
These guys aren't pissed. Look at our fucking faces. My face is red. My eyes are beeling. So are his, right?
You have not heard that word for years.
Beeling.
Beeling.
but that, see that there, though? That creates tension. What happens when people fight at school?
Mm.
A crowd forms. People want to see that shit, right? So if people are paying,
fucking weird creatures,
right?
They?
So if people pay to come and see you, give them something to see, and that's where that comes from. And that's the same thing with Rowdy Roddy Piper and Goldust. They wanted to give that show an extra element of real, and they've done that.
One other thing that I've certainly seen in wrestling is how strong the personalities are. Certainly when it gets to the highest level, and. There's a personality that's so strong that it fucking inspired me. And that was Diamond Dallas Page. I watched the Resurrection of Jake the Snake. I don't even know why I watched it. In fact, no, I do know, because I heard Jake the Snake on Joe Rogan
podcast,
and I thought I'm just going to watch this. So I actually paid for it on Amazon Prime. So I'm going to watch this, and the transformation that he took him through, even though Jake was fighting against it so many times, not fighting against it, his addiction was fighting against it so many times in the documentary, and it gets to the end of it and I'm like, he's gone for living essentially, and it's almost a trailer park, you know, it's a really fucking horrible wee bungalow that he's living in, to actually getting inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
What a turnaround, right?
I mean, it's unbelievable, and even his physical transformation, he went from not being able to walk nearly to doing exercises that I can't do.
Mate, he was back in the ring.
He was back in the ring. Yeah, it was it Monday Night Raw he ended up on, and yeah, it was quite a moment. And then, I started doing yoga.
Oh, DDP yoga.
Not DDP yoga, because it's fucking expensive. I had been back and forward with him a few times to see how we could, if there was any way we could work out to make it a bit cheaper. But it is expensive, but it's still tempting, because it clearly works. You seen that guy, Arthur?
Fat guy.
Arthur, the vet, the veteran. Not they didn't fucking work on animals. He was a war veteran.
Yeah.
Went from walking on canes to running down the street.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. And yeah, me, fucking yoga.
Yoga.
Honestly, yoga. Aye.
Yoga.
This big person, that must be a big personality.
Yes.
To
to get me doing yoga.
Why they call them WWE superstars?
Yeah.
They need to be. They need. It's not just the physical thing. You could be the worst wrestler, but see if your personality is bigger than anything.
Wait, Dallas Page's story itself is crazy. He didn't even start doing it until he was in his mid 30s.
Yep.
And he ended up being champion, didn't he?
Champion. Yeah.
that's fucking nuts. What a personality he must have to actually get to that level. And he done it within the space of 4 years or something. It wasn't a long time in the wrestling game. And he went straight in to WCW.
Mm-hmm.
Straight in there. No low level shit that you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
He went straight into that.
He'd have got a ton of heat for that.
Just off his personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm imagining that fucking hard time he must have got to start off.
Well, you think about it. Imagine you're not seeing your family for 10 years because you're on the road, you're missing your kids' birthdays, right? You've done all the groundwork, you've been beating the shit out of you, you've had to put rings away, you've had the sore, you've worked your ass off for a hot dog, right? You get to the big time, the big game, right, where everybody deserves to be there, right, including yourself. You know you've worked, you've sweat, blood, tears, everything to get to where you're at. You don't know who your kid is, bar what you see in fucking, at that time, probably just letters.
Yeah.
Right? But nowadays, it'd be what you see of him on Skype, FaceTime, you're missing his birthday parties, his school concerts, everything. Some arsehole walks in, doesn't even know how to take a bump as champ. You've been working your life off for that. You've been working. You've literally been a shit dad to get that championship, and someone walks in who, what,
ran a nightclub,
and wins the title.
On personality,
the most prestigious thing that you've spent your life chasing, and they just come in and win it. You're now you think about it that way. When you look at the roster, there's like fucking what 45 people that all work there. Minimum 45 people that are all chasing that same dream.
Yeah.
So see when you go into the locker room,
yeah,
it's no well done, you've won, mate, you've got a fucking shit in your bag that's chained to a fucking thing. Now you kind of take your bag with you, now you're going to miss your flight.
Yeah.
Right. And you know what, that is the reality of the wrestling business.
Not painting it in a very good fucking light, are we?
I'm just telling you my experience, right? That is the experience. I remember when I was doing a show with a previous company, and the Glasgow guys that are now all in ICW had come through to work show with us, because we used to work with those guys. And they come into to our locker room and they walk in, and I remember always being like, right, Kevin, first things first, always remember to shake the guys' hands. They're veterans, they've been doing it, they're teaching people how to do it. I'm a nobody. Always remember. And I remember standing up, and a guy came in whose name's Kid Fight. He's in ICW. His real name's Ross. And he walked in with two of his trainees, and I stood up first thing straight away, shook his hand and said, hi, my name's Kevin, I'm a trainee. Never say I'm a wrestler, because you're fucking not a wrestler. And they'll remind you, you're not a wrestler, you're a trainee, you're training to be a wrestler. So shake a hand, nice to meet you. Shake his trainee's hand, respect to who he's brought to the show, and then continue getting on with him. One of the guys that was with me at the time, didn't he? And oh God, the door got shut.
Really?
The door got shut, and it was right, see what that guy did, that's how you address it. One fucking thing I'm going to tell all you fucking nabdies, right, so stand the fuck up. And he's like, see when somebody walks in that's through this business, and he'll tell you, this is what I've done, and I've done this, blah 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 blah. The least you can do is stand the fuck up and shake my hand. Like, it got tense, and I'm standing there like, I mean, I know it's not aimed at me. Right, but
finally,
I know, right?
Not aimed at you.
Right.
You're like, oh, I did everything right.
Right, and mate, what attention? And you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, they're getting shit for not shaking someone's hand, for not showing them respect. And they come and think it. The wrestling business is built on respect for your peers and people that came before you.
Yeah,
you don't like if Jackhammer Jordan yourself was on a show, and I'm fucking Fruit Loop Kevin, right? If your finishing move's a powerbomb, and I go out before you and I use a powerbomb, well, I've just used your move. What are you gonna do? It's your thing. Why the fuck did I take it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Think something simple like that is enough to get you your heat kicked in when you go back, right? Did you not ask me my finishing move? I didn't think I had to. I mean, did you declare that was your move? And this is where the thing is, you kind of just attack this guy, because you will never work in wrestling again if you punch this guy back.
Yeah.
You will. He's at the top, near the top of the mountain with the guys that respect him and love him dearly. Do you think I'm going to be like, here, he punched me, so I punched him back? You think they're going to be like, all right, well, that's fine. Fuck no, you're gone. You are gone. One mistake can have you ousted.
It's obviously it's a business that has its peaks and it's got its troughs. It's not an easy business. It's not all glamour and glitz. And it takes a special type of person to get to the highest levels of it. Even to get to somewhere like ICW, mm-hmm. take a fuckload of effort.
Even to get there, get into ICW, means you're doing really well.
So, like I said, I do have a newfound respect for it. I've got fucking crazy respect for you for actually taking that for so long.
Let me just say, I am far at the bottom of the pyramid as to where respect should go to for wrestlers. The guys that are still doing it, look at guys in Reckless Intent, look at guys in ICW and all over the UK. These guys are the guys that deserve respect. Me, I look at my time as I dipped my toe in a bath water. That is it. I don't deserve any kind of respect for my time in wrestling. What I do take away from it is the friendship that I had for people, the appreciation for the time that people spent on me. But I was nothing to wrestling.
Yeah.
Right. I got to look behind the curtain and experience it, and all of it. I look back on it fondly. And I don't even have any grudges with anybody. I have none but respect for the guys. So respect to the people. And here's one thing I'll say to everybody that's listening to this going, wrestling's fake, wrestling's shit. You are a fucking pussy. Until you go and do a training session, then walk away and say that wrestling is for pussies. Because
mm-hmm.
until then, you are nothing but a pussy to me. Absolutely nothing but a pussy.
And on that note, that's been my... if I don't say so myself, fucking quality interview with Kevin about his time in wrestling.
Absolutely.
One more question I've got before we sign off on this one, and it's not really about your time in wrestling, but I'm just going to ask you, what is your favourite moment in professional wrestling ever?
And, like, watching it on TV?
Yeah. You still watch it, you still watch the Royal Rumble, right?
Mm-hmm.
You still watch as much wrestling as you can, even when you've got 57 kids. Now, going back to when you started watching it as a kid, what do you remember as being your favourite moment?
When I was, can I segue this into different parts of the wrestling era? When I was younger, my favourite moment was discovering wrestling, when I seen Hulk Hogan wrestling Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 3. That was what got me hooked. Hulk Hogan all the way, right?
Yeah.
Fast forward. There have been a few others, and for me it's always reactions. It's never always the match. It's remembering moments within wrestling. Like I spent my whole life watching The Rock, because I grew up watching The Rock. The Rock goes away to Hollywood, The Rock's no longer in wrestling, right? And back in 2011 they were like, right, now The Rock and wrestling, if you're a wrestling fan, someone says The Rock's in wrestling, you're like, what? You wouldn't even associate them anymore because he's so far removed from it.
Yeah.
And they're going to have a special enforcer for WrestleMania who's going to host WrestleMania, and they're not telling you who it was, and the lights all come down and the anticipation builds and The Rock's music hits and you just can't hear anything but like the appreciation for the audience.
Yeah.
That, see shit like that, that's what keeps you hooked.
So it's the moments.
It's the moments. Always the moments where, like, because in that moment where The Rock is back after like 7 years of never being in wrestling, and everybody in that arena is like going off their head because it's the fucking Rock, right? Someone who helped put the wrestling to where it is, returning to give back the company. It literally solidifies like your appreciation for wrestling from your childhood. That's like, wow. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the full stop on it.
Yeah.
So you automatically are transcended back to every match you've seen with The Rock, all your memories, and this guy's come back, just stuff like that. Those are the real moments. And after we stop recording, I'm going to have you watch that, right? Because you can't watch that and they'll be like, wow, right? Cause
yeah, I'll watch that.
No one ever thought it would return, right? Stuff like that. And then there's another one where CM Punk, a wrestler, was pissed off with everything I've kind of told you. The
mm-hmm.
backstage stuff was
yeah.
so pissed off that one day he just sat on the ramp, went right off script, grabbed a mic and says, this company's fucking shit, Vince McMahon, he's a fucking bully, everything, right? To the point people are like, and they cut his mic off and just went off air.
Mm.
Which created such a buzz because now everybody was talking about wrestling.
Who was it that spat on Vince McMahon?
Bret Hart.
Yeah, I seen that.
That was real as well.
Yeah.
There are times on camera where things will happen that are real and it's due to what's going on backstage, right? And CM Punk, Bret Hart got screwed out of a championship match, which kind of was his own fault, but he spat on Vince McMahon and then punched him backstage, right? But you move back to 2000 and I think it was 2011, and CM Punk literally, everybody knew that shit was going on in wrestling, but it was just all, it was rumoured, because people love the backstage rumours just as much as they love what's going on screen. And it was always rumoured, but it was confirmed when he sat down. It was just like, I don't give a fuck if you fire me, I'm fucking leaving, I'm done with this, to the point that everybody's like, oh my god, this is the most interesting thing that's ever happened, he can't leave. And WWE are like, please stay. And then his last match, which was supposed to be his very last match, after he'd done that, again the crowd just blew the fucking roof off for him, because he gave them something real in a time that was all hokey.
Yeah.
Right? He stood up like, nah, fuck this, and from now has always been CM Punk, like, top of the fucking game. And that's why when he went to UFC he had such a following, because it was CM fucking Punk.
Yeah.
Didn't he do so well, but CM fucking Punk, and he has his uses and he plays to his strengths, and one thing he can do is grab a microphone and have you hooked.
Yeah.
He does that so well. So that's another thing I need to show you, alright?
Well, we kind of do an episode based solely around wrestling without mentioning Lionheart.
Absolutely.
He was the first interview that we ever did for the podcast.
Yep.
Seemed like a genuine guy. He knew his craft. He knew how to work a crowd. He knew how to make Scottish wrestling the best that it could be.
He pioneered quite a lot. He was even kicking around before wrestling had its resurgence.
Yeah.
He was always there. I never worked with him personally, but he did work at Reckless Intent. And he did have matches at Reckless Intent,
right,
just when I had gone. But one thing on a personal level for us is he made us feel like it was our first time ever, you know, covering a convention, getting real interviews with real people.
Yeah.
And he made us feel like we, do you know what I mean? He made us feel legitimate.
He gave us as much time as we wanted, not as much time as he wanted, and that's something special. And it was tragic what happened to him. So just a shout out to him and all the other guys at ICW for having to deal with that.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Yeah, we'll leave that one there. And it's been a pleasure. I don't think we'll ever talk about wrestling again.
It'll pop up from time to time.
So keep on listening. In fact, I'll let you do this, but you're the one that's good. You're good at the plugging.
Make sure to check out all our old episodes. Remember, we are now on Podbean, and we will stay there for this foreseeable. We've got a wee contract for a year now, so it's a year at least. So you can check our stuff out on Podbean. You can go to iTunes. Our new feeds are all up. iTunes, YouTube, Spotify, everywhere. Go and check out Jibber Jabber Podcast. We also be announcing some upcoming stuff pretty soon. About to get interesting again. Make sure to check out our older episodes. Make sure to like our Facebooks, Twitter. Make sure to check out our Facebook community page, Jibber Jabber Community.
That's my favourite thing. That's my favourite thing about the podcast, is that community page.
The community page is brilliant, and I love how you guys always share your stuff with us as well. If you guys ever want to do something with us, let us know. If you ever want us to come to you, do something, if you've got a great idea, let us know. If you want to hear about stuff, let us know.
And on that note, baby,
now get the guns, the drugs from my generation, I'll take the fire.